Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, this episode of Enough About Me is brought to you by our great friends at Milton's. As you know, Milton's is the store for men. I say it every time. Locations in Chestnut Hill Square in Chestnut Hill and at the Braintree Mall. Milton's the store for men. I'll be there soon. I haven't been there in a while, as a matter of fact, as I look at 128 and the traffic. Maybe I'll shoot down there after, as a matter of fact. I may just do that. Milton's has been a loyal Kirk Minahan supporter here throughout the entire fucking ordeal. So when you go in there, thank them very much for loyalty, because it is a thing that is dying. And it's not easy to be a loyal supporter of somebody who says something that somebody disagrees with. I don't care under what circumstance it is anymore in 2019. It's a very scary and gutsy thing to do. So if you're looking for clothes at a great price and look good, go to Milton's. You're done. And you can support me, which helps all the time. All right, I am taping this right now in the Howie Carr studio in Needham, Massachusetts. I'll have Howie on here in a few minutes. I'm just going to do a quick intro here and give you a quick update on the show itself. I think sometime in the next week, we're going to post this probably Wednesday or Thursday. This is Tuesday, what, the 15th? So I think we'll post this Thursday the 16th or Friday the 17th. I'm looking for my phone. We'll probably have an announcement sometime in the next two or three days. Yeah, it's the 15th. Sometime in the next two or three days. And where we're going to do it from, I think we may know as well. I'm not going to lie to you. Right now, my gut feeling is I'm going to do it solo to start and have sort of rotating people come in and come out. I just don't want to be partnered up right away and then have it not work and have chemistry issues and have it be two or three weeks in saying, I can't work with this person. Not that they're a good person or not, that it's just not clicking. And you know when it doesn't work. Mutt and Maloney at the start didn't work. Mutt and Callahan don't. I mean, Mutt and Callahan are an example of a show that really clicks. So you have one and then you have the other one. So I think, you know, I'm going to do that from the start. And I'm looking for, you know, as I said the other day, I have an idea of where we may do the show from. I think I know the time of day it's going to be on. I think I know the start date. I don't have a producer as of yet. I don't have a co-host and I don't think I'm going to have one for a while. But I feel much, 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 much better on 50 different levels than I did, say, even a week ago or 10 days ago. 10 days ago, I was in a slump. I was thinking, this show is not going to happen. We're doing nothing. But we've been really proactive and taking some big steps forward. So I'm encouraged about that. Personally, what I've done as well, and I'm not proud of this. I shouldn't say that. I used to be a blocker on Twitter. And then I wasn't. And then I blocked some of the guys on the old show, Mutt, Jerry, Chris, Ken, and the show account itself. Not because they do things that hurt, that I'm sensitive to or anything like that. I don't care. Tweet whatever you want. You know that. I just had to cleanse that show out of my life to a large extent. I can't really talk to Jerry on the phone anymore because it becomes sort of a bitch session. Same with Chris and Ken a little bit. And the same, to some extent, with Mutt. I just said, you know what? I have to go clear. I have to get this show out of my life, out of my system to move forward. It just felt like I was going in circles. Nothing against those guys. I wish them well. You know, good luck with whatever they're doing. I don't really listen to that show much anymore. I'm not like, I'm not going to lie and say I never listen. I don't listen a whole hell of a lot. I don't find it particularly interesting either. The content, I think they have to figure their shit out. So I'm going to let them do that. And I'm going to figure out my stuff as well because it's now time for a divorce. I mean, it's enough. It's been, you know, I left the show in September, October, November, December, January, and we're, you know, over 4 months ago now. So it's time to move forward. I wish them a lot of luck because they're going to need it. And I'm going to do my own thing. And I think people can choose who they want or listen to both. You can absolutely listen to both. But my show is going to be a lot different than what their show is. Maybe better, maybe worse. It's going to be 180 degrees different. And I think the station right now has to figure out what they are too. I listen to it occasionally. I don't know what they are. They are in an identity crisis. They have to figure out what's going on. They have to do it fast or they're going to be wiped off the planet. And I don't think they have the leadership in that building to guide them that way, to be honest with you. I just don't think there's any vision in there. I think the vision's about, you know, two feet ahead of them. And you need somebody in there who's a thinker. And I've worked and had conversations with the people who are decision makers. They are not thinkers. So that's really it. I'll have another update here in the next week or so as we get closer and closer. The Ken thing is the Ken thing. He chose to stay. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I, you know, wish him a lot of luck. So we're going to do this with Howie Carr. I think I'll do a mailbag next week, sort of a show update mailbag if you guys want. So I'll tweet that out sometime at the end of next week as well. So Howie Carr is going to join me. I'm going to ask him about his new book. I'm going to ask him about the show. I'm going to ask him about his feelings about Intercom. I'm being profiled in Boston Magazine coming up. Howie was on the cover of Boston Magazine a few weeks ago. Kennedy Babylon, Volume 2. I'm looking at it right here. Excellent. And Howie wrote a foreword to a book that's 30 years old about Chappaquiddick that I'm in the middle of. I'm like 400 pages in. It's one of the best true crime books I've ever read in my life. Leo DeMore, or DeMore. I'll ask Howie the pronunciation. It's about Chappaquiddick. It's unbelievable. So I want to talk to Howie about that as well. And a lot more is Howie Carr, who was here 2 years ago. Not here. I'm in the studio right now. Was on the podcast 2 years ago. Makes his return to Enough About Me. So Howie was here. I mean, Howie, you were here about, not here. You're here now. But you did the podcast with me about 2 years ago. Is that right? Kennedy Babylon.
Yes.
Came out. You were in March 2017, I want to say. I was looking at it last night. And then you crank out another one, which I enjoyed. I want to get to that in a second. There's a million things I want to talk to you about. But first, I want to talk to you about this. So I had never read this. This is Chappaquiddick. And is it DeMore or DeMore?
DeMore.
This book is friggin' incredible. This is one of the, I'm about 450 pages in. It's one of the, I don't know, five best true crime books I've ever read. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it is. That's why they tried to kill it. I mean, that's why, and they end up, they didn't kill the book, but they killed him.
He wound up committing suicide, right?
Yeah.
So I read your foreword on it. And I read the, like I said, about four-fifths of the way done. So I went back and sort of looked in the internet, and it's funny. So it was this number one bestseller, runaway bestseller, and nobody reviewed it. The New York Times didn't touch it. The Globe didn't touch it. And on its own, just word of mouth, spread to number one because people want, and it's sort of an interesting, to, when you look at it versus today, it was what the public clearly wanted to read about. But the old media, which they would probably do today if they was trying to shut this book up about Chappaquiddick. It's about Chappaquiddick, if you're listening. It's Chappaquiddick, Power, Privilege, and the Ted Kennedy Cover-Up. And the amount of research this guy did is mind-boggling to me.
Right. And his main source is the cousin, right. Joe Gargan.
Right.
And Joe Gargan was there that night, and he was with them, and Paul Markham, the former U.S. attorney, another Kennedy operative.
He was there too.
They were the ones who were there with him when he was drunk, and they were supposedly diving into the water. And Gargan wasn't quoted directly, but basically he told Leo DeMore that Kennedy asked him, why can't we say Mary Jo was driving?
Driving the car. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Or, yeah. Which, you know, and to their credit, they're both lawyers, correct?
Right.
And they both said—
All lawyers. Three of them.
Right. All three of them. And they're saying, well, you know, Ted, we
You already told us you were driving.
Right. And they're also screaming on that bridge.
Yeah.
During that night.
And we don't know if she even has a driver's license.
Right.
And by the way, they didn't know it at the time, but another girl's purse and her driver's license are in the car.
In the car,
Cricket,
right.
Keo,
right.
Rosemary Cricket Keo.
Right. It just speaks to, you know, the reason I brought this up is it speaks to sort of, I think, the narrative through the two Kennedy Babylon books you've written about for years. If I had to, I guess, use one word to describe them, it would be arrogance, right? If you had to pick one word to describe the family, or something else?
Entitled,
right,
perhaps.
Right. I guess they're sort of cousins.
What I've always said is, as far as the Kennedys are concerned, life is a movie. They're the stars, and everybody else is an extra.
Right, right, yeah.
That's the way it is. I mean, everybody else is disposable, including people like Joe Gargan, who are their blood relatives, or Michael Skakel, their blood relatives. Everybody else, if you're not a Kennedy direct line, you're a peasant.
What's interesting about Gargan is he winds up dying, and nobody even knows it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, nobody even, and this guy was a central.
Well, yeah, he was, everybody in that group ended up in AA, except for Ted Kennedy, of course. And so, but he got a job, he got a hack job in the Dukakis administration,
right,
working for the registry, you know, the appeals board for basically for, you know, reckless drunk drivers. And he was always brooming the cases. And the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, which is a group you never hear about anymore, they wanted him out, and they got rid of him as soon as Weld got into office.
Is that because of the Kennedy connection, or?
No, because he kept brooming the cases.
Right.
I mean, really outrageous cases. You know, these were cases that were so bad that the corrupt judges of Massachusetts couldn't broom them, you know? So they would lose their licenses, and then they would go before Joe Gargan, and he would, even though he was in AA, and even though he knew what had happened in this case, a drunk driving case, a woman dead, he still broomed the cases.
What's wild about the Kennedy, like, they're clearly not we talked about this last time. They're just clearly not as relevant as they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. Although they're still in the news. I mean, Chris Pratt just got engaged to one, essentially, the
right,
other day,
right?
Maria Schwarzenegger's kid. I mean, people, there's still this appeal, but, like, you know, I wonder when the moment was, like, for my generation, they don't matter as much, right?
Yeah,
for my mom and dad's generation, they meant everything. I'm not sure what happened. I mean, I know stuff that happened in between, but I wonder what the moment was where people just said, well, you know, I mean, they're almost mocked now in a lot of ways. Like, you know, some people feel the way you did, whereas you couldn't have written that book 30 years ago.
No, I mean,
you could have, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like, people now read that and say, and believe it. 30 years ago, people would try and sweep it under the rug, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, like the, you know, when the what I wrote about in the Kennedy Babylon 1 was the strange death of Marilyn Monroe. This guy put out a pamphlet.
Right.
Basically saying the truth, that RFK and Peter Lawford were there the night she died. And, you know, nobody really knows what happened, but they were there. And he was audited. He was immediately audited by the feds.
Right.
Even though, you know, JFK was dead by that time.
True.
You know, Bobby Kennedy still had the clout to get him, basically destroy that guy's life. And again, Leo DeMore, they basically killed that guy.
And Ted Kennedy tried to get you out of your job.
Right. He tried to shut down not only the Boston Herald, but the New York Post.
With Murdoch,
as well.
Right?
Yeah, because
so what's
Murdoch,
the story? So what's based on, is something specifically you wrote, or was it just a line of stories you wrote?
I started calling him. This was when he was at his fat height, you know, his fat grossness.
Right.
And so I started calling him Fat Boy, and he hated it. He hated it. And so I think the thing that really pushed him over the top was he was on a boat with one other guy and five women. And they went ashore. They grounded themselves. They were so loaded. And so they had to call the Coast Guard to get them off. And there were like 500 beer cans and empty booze bottles on the boat with the five young women and the two guys. And so the Coast Guard told everybody about this.
Right.
And they were the Coast Guard guy was laughing. And then like Ted Kennedy went crazy. So they made the Coast Guard guy call up every reporter that he'd spoken to, including me. And they taped his call so that Ted Kennedy could listen to it. So there was this call where, hello, Howie. This is Chief Petty Officer Joe Blow. I'd like to apologize for those terrible things I said about. And so I wrote a column about it with the eeps in it. And I said he had this. This was his alternative. The other alternative was going to the Aleutian Islands for the winter, you know. And so that was when Ted Kennedy just withered, went off the deep end. And so he put a rider in to force Ted Kennedy to either Rupert Murdoch, to either sell, because he owned TV stations and newspapers in Boston and New York, that he was going to either have to sell the newspapers or the TV stations. And he got a guy named Fritz Hollings to put it in. And I don't know if you know who
South Carolina,
right.
Right.
And Fritz Hollings is, you know, like the Kennedys are such great crusaders for social justice. I was laughing about this when they had the dispute over the Confederate flag over the state capitol. And you know who put the Confederate flag up? It was never up all the years of Reconstruction and Jim Crow and all that. Governor Fritz Hollings put the Confederate flag over the thing. No, nobody ever talked about that.
Right.
It was
right.
Like that, you know, it was like Nikki Haley was getting the blame for the Confederate flag.
Right.
She had nothing to do with it. She wasn't even alive when they put it up. But this is all sort of the hidden history. I mean, if you look back, it's not suppressed. It's just nobody knows it because it never gets reported.
What's wild is, you know, even since we talked last, like the whole Me Too thing has happened in between, right? And I think if somebody, you know, fairly did a reexamination of John F. Kennedy, who's now still treated like a god,
right,
in the prism of the Me Too era, I mean, this is a guy who was essentially raping interns, I mean, in swimming pools and forcing her to have, you know, sex with other men.
Right.
I mean, you dove into much more, but I mean, this is one of the this is a legitimate sexual predator.
Right. He was taken into custody one night in West Palm when he was in his, you know, in his 20s, attacking some nightclub singer or something like that. I mean, he wasn't really that bad compared to Ted, I don't think.
No,
I mean,
in terms of
attacking women.
But I mean, Mimi Alford, is that her name?
Yeah, Mimi Alford. Right. Yeah, she was the intern. She was from up here. You know, he really had this thing for a waspy social register Yankee type women, and she was one of them. And she was just a beautiful girl. And he deflowered her. You know, that's an old word, but that's what he did.
No, that's what he did. Yeah. It's just...
Yeah. And then he starts, she couldn't type. And she's just going out on these trips with him, you know. Yeah. As fiddle and faddle. He had and they were in Kennedy Babylon 1. And the thing was, I mean, when I was doing the research, I saw this picture of him, and I said, this is weird. Where'd this picture come from? It was in the Herald Files. Mm. And they had done a whole chapter. This was in Kennedy Babylon 1, not 2.
Yep.
White House beauties. In June of 1961, the Hearst Sunday Supplement, which is like the parade magazine of the Hearst newspapers, yeah, had done a whole story on White House beauties. And they had pictures of three of his mistresses.
That's insane.
And I'm just thinking to myself, I'll bet my aunt and I, when we were going to church in Portland at Sacred Heart, I bet she picked up that paper
that day, right?
Yeah, and was going, said, this is nice. Oh,
this is so
this
sweet.
Is nice. It's so nice to have an Irish Catholic right. president after all these years. Al Smith should have gotten it, but now we have Jack and Jackie. Oh.
That's what I always wonder about. When did it change? When did cynicism enter the media like that? You know, when was it? Was it the 70s? Was it the 80s?
It just kind of came out slowly. I mean, I remember because, you know, I got into this in Kennedy Babylon, too. My father knew these people in
right.
Palm Beach.
Yes.
He knew Joe Kennedy. And he knew Joe Kennedy was chasing women around
right.
in the 1930s and 40s. But I think for most people, it just started coming out in the 70s,
yeah.
you know, when they had the assassination committees, you know,
yeah.
the House and the Senate were
right.
investigating. And that's when it came out about Judith Campbell Exner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it came out that Judith Campbell Exner was also the mistress of CMG and Kana Momo,
yeah. yep.
who's on the cover of
right.
Kennedy
there,
Babylon 2. And, you know, and then Momo and his guy Johnny Roselli from East Boston get
yep.
called to testify, and they get two in the hat.
Right.
And Roselli ends up in a barrel floating off of Biscayne Bay. So people begin to think, you know, when you get whacked before you can testify,
there's something going on.
Yeah, you figure there's a little fire with that smoke.
It's not dissimilar, even like it's much smaller, but even in sports, like back in those days, you know, Mickey Mantle was a drunk, but nobody wrote about it. You know, guys would screw around, but nobody would talk about it. Now it's in the news. It's something, you know, something
yeah.
happened.
Well, I mean, there were even like hints of it. There's a famous Gay Talese story in Esquire about Joe DiMaggio.
And right.
Do you know that story?
Yes. Yep.
And Joe DiMaggio is coming back for the Hall of Fame Day or All Time
right.
Great Day, and so Robert Kennedy is the senator. It's like, or he's running for the Senate. I forget. It's 64 or 65, and so he's going down the list of all the going down the, right. the row of all the Yankee greats. He's
got no use for him, right?
Yeah. And Joe DiMaggio sees Bobby Kennedy coming at him. And he goes right back into the dugout
right.
and turns his back. And Gay Talese just mentions it in passing. Like, I don't know if he didn't know what the story was, but for those of you who haven't read Kennedy Babylon 1 or 2, Joe DiMaggio was married to Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
And he was the one who was there to clean
the
up.
Body after,
he loved
after
Marilyn
she died,
Monroe.
Right?
Even,
yeah.
yeah, he wanted to come back to her. He was going to quit all of his jobs and come back and rescue her from her drug addiction and whatever. And he came back into the house, and he was going through the house the next day, the bungalow in Brentwood, looking for the diary and
right.
that she had on her affair with the Kennedys. And he put out the word at the funeral. He paid for the funeral. He said, "No Kennedys,
right.
no Kennedys."
Well, that's the thing. Quick, we'll move on to other stuff. But the last thing I want to say is amazing how the Kennedys just assume they would pay for the funeral for Mary Jo, and to do this and to do that, and her family was leave us alone. Like, what do you, you know, it's amazing how presumptuous they are. I mean, Teddy Kennedy essentially kills this woman and thinks, you know what, we'll pay for the funeral, we'll show up, we'll take care of it. You know, entitled, I guess, is the right word.
It was the same thing with Pam Kelly, you know, who was crippled by Joe Kennedy.
By Joe Kennedy, right.
You know, they wrote him a check for, the Kellys a check for $1 million. Like, she's 21 years old and she's never going to walk again.
Right.
And then I got a call from her, and like, you know, 12, 13 years ago, she was broke. And she said that Joe was telling her, I have no money to pay. I said, let me write a column.
Right. Yeah. What happened after that?
He found the money.
The money showed up somehow?
Yeah.
So I am, going to be the subject of a cover story in Boston Magazine in the next month or two. You just were. Did you read the story?
No.
You didn't read the story?
No.
Is that really true?
No, that's true.
How is that possible?
You can ask Steve. I didn't read the story.
So there's a cover story about you in Boston Magazine. See, you're different than I am. I would have to read it. I'd have to, because, you know, Steve Buckley wrote this long story about me in The Athletic, which I had a lot of problems with. I read it and got worked up. If you read it, and I'm sure you know what's in it, all the greatest hits, right? Would it piss you off or no?
I figured it would just, you know, it would probably irritate me. I mean, as soon as he called me, I said, well, why do I want to, you know, contribute to this story?
Right.
I mean, we shouldn't have even given him any pictures. I wouldn't have given him any pictures. Steve gave him the pictures. I thought we told him not to give him any pictures. I didn't want to cooperate in the least.
Do you think it's the criticism in it is that you are going to defend Trump no matter what? Do you think that's a fair criticism or no?
Compared to Hillary Clinton, you know, I'm on Trump's side.
But I mean, did Trump do things? I mean, like, are things Trump has done where you've said, you know what, this is?
I mean, some tweets. I mean, I thought, you know, some tweets go overboard. I mean, but basically, again, the story was I was a subject of an assault of an attack because I get along
like
with Trump.
Right.
Just like Ernie Bach Jr.
Correct.
Ernie Bach Jr. I don't read Boston Magazine. The only two people, you're the only person I've talked to under the age of 70 who's actually read the story.
People in the dentist office who have read it. That's where I see it, in the shrink's office,
right,
or the dentist's office.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I was at a doctor in West Roxbury who's like close to my age. I'm not 70 yet, but he'd read it, and I was an old editor who remembered the Worcester Telegram and Gazette.
Right.
He told me last week. I mean, if you even remember the Gazette, you're probably getting the Social Security check.
Yeah. So that stuff, but you don't read stuff that's written about you in general, or no?
No, I don't. No.
Never? Always been your policy?
No. You know, it's changed. I remember one time talking to John Finnegan. He used to be the auditor. He told me, he said, when I started out in politics, I used to run down to the stoop every morning and go through the papers to see if my name was in it. I'd be happy if it did. He said, now I'm all these years later, I run down to the stoop and I get the papers off and I look through. And if I don't see my name in the paper, I'm happy. That's the way I feel.
Do you, we're getting closer to the point now where it's incredible. If you voted for this president, it's seen like as a hate crime the other side has now snapped to the point where if you even said, you know what? Yeah. You know, I had a conversation with somebody recently where I said, I think it's actually, you know, I disagree with a lot, but I think there's a lot of the good stuff that Trump has done. And the person looked at me like I just spit in their face. It is, you would know better than me. It feels like the craziest time ever. It just feels like the craziest time ever. And that, you know, nobody can say, you know, nobody can admit when the president does something good. The people who support him have a hard time admitting he does something bad. It's just, it seems the inflexibility is off the charts. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've been talking about it for the last day or so. I just was talking with Mark Simone on WOR before I came in here.
Yeah.
The story in the New York Times on Saturday saying that the FBI began an investigation of Donald Trump as a Russian agent after Comey was fired. I read the story and I thought to myself, this is the most dishonest news story I have ever read.
It's total bullshit.
Yeah, it is. Utter. I don't know who's worse, the corrupt cops in the FBI or the corrupt quote-unquote journalists at the New York Times.
But don't you think they are? I mean, don't you think it's clearly born from such mania that this man is played with their heads to such extent that they are now comfortable. You know, all the things we suspected and really thought over the years, things that you had written, Bernie Goldberg wrote about 15, 20 years ago in Biased, we all now know that. And they're not even hiding it anymore. It's just, here it is. We don't care. We're not going to source it. We just want to get it out there. We want people to see it and tweet it and get worked up.
No, exactly. I mean, they put the story out on Friday night so that the charges can't be answered except on like the Sunday shows where you have Democrat operatives going, who did your boss work for the Russians? And then they don't. Okay, the investigation begins after Comey was fired. Okay, so we have an inspector general's report from the Justice Department out there which says that the day Andrew McCabe became the acting FBI director, the guy whose wife took $700,000 from Clinton's people to run for the Senate in Virginia, the day he was appointed, he obstructed justice four times by lying to federal agents. So he's got a grand jury coming after him. He's going to be indicted before Trump.
Right.
And they don't mention that in the story. They quote Lisa Page, the girlfriend of Strzok, and say, we had to protect Western democracy from Russia. What? You're trying to subvert a duly elected president? And they also have him on tweeting back and forth or texting back and forth. We've got to get an investigation going to get rid of Trump before a real cop comes in here.
Right.
And that's all on the record, and they don't put it in.
But here's the truth.
They treat the readers with contempt.
But here's the truth, though. You like when stories like that are written.
I do.
It's great business. I mean, you don't really want, I know I don't, you don't really want the New York Times to suddenly be this intellectually honest, fair and balanced, middle of the road newspaper.
No, but I'm still shocked.
You're still, that's what's amazing to me is you're still shocked at this point.
Well, I was shocked at the level of that one.
Right.
You know, the thing is, like, you know, the Kitty Genovese case. Do you remember that one?
I know the story. Yeah, that's.
You know, the woman who was murdered and everybody supposedly, knew that it was going on out in Queens
and just
didn't do anything.
She
was screaming. Well, the thing is, that story was gotten by Abe Rosenthal, who took a lot. He was the managing editor of the New York Times.
Yeah.
But he was a guy from New York City. You know, he'd come up through the ranks, and he had lunch with a deputy superintendent of the NYPD. Now, do you think anybody at the NYPD or anybody at the New York Times knows anybody at the NYPD now?
No. They wouldn't want to.
No.
The idea that to talk to those people,
they would say, that's Archie. That guy probably voted for Donald Trump.
Right.
I'm not talking to him.
Yes. Yeah, you know? No, of course.
I mean, that's the thing. These people are cut off from half the country. The part of the country that actually works.
Well, I think that's why when I see, you know, I think it's great business for Trump when I see, and it's, if I were whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be in a couple of years, whoever it is, the first thing I would do if I work for them is I would say, you have to sit down and make sure that not a single celebrity speaks out for you. Tell them to shut up. The best thing you can do is shut your mouth, because you know the next couple of years, the celebrities, they're just the same exact thing. I mean, they live in a bubble, an entirely different planet. They're tweeting out, they're saying how evil Trump is, videos of them crying, selfies about them losing their mind. For me, that's great business for Trump. You can't go wrong with that.
Well, the new publisher of the New York Times, Pinch Sulzberger, he was the previous one.
Yep.
You know, when he was a kid, he's a little older than me. They sent him down to North Carolina to season him, and he like actually worked for one of the papers in Raleigh.
Yeah.
You know, and he covered the county commissioners and the police and all that crap. And but then his son, they send him out to the Kansas City bureau. You know, of the new not the Kansas City Star. They sent him to the Kansas City Bureau of the New York Times. And again, this is how the bubble they're in.
Right.
He was known for writing a wry piece for the Times on what it's like to be a vegan or vegan in Kansas City. Oh, that is so. He learned so much. He journeyed. He parachuted in to be amongst the red state meat eaters. Yucky, yucky.
But I mean, obviously the Globe is just as lost as the New York Times is. I mean, they're in the same, they're in the exact same bubble. I mean, the exact same. It's amazing. What's amazing to me is I was thinking of this the other day. I was looking at, I don't ever buy the Globe, obviously, but I was at Cumberland Farms. The Globe was there, and I was looking at it. Kevin Cullen is working right now, and I am not. Just to give you an idea of how strange the world is.
Well, have you read Leah Gendoso's piece yet? The 74-page.
No
biography that she did.
No.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of funny stuff in there. She calls me an old man stalker.
Oh, this is the one, the Turtle Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't read it yet. No.
But she, you know, she throws herself. She said, her lawyer said, well, we're going to throw ourselves at the mercy of the Globe, and you're going to give them a sob story and a puff piece. And so she does it. And then she writes at the bottom, she writes what they did and how they were really wonderful to her and gave her all the benefits, even though she's a drug dealer and a perjurer and a drug abuser and, a money launderer, et cetera, et cetera. The Globe did a great job. Sadly, it had no effect. Welcome to 2019, Leah. The Globe has no effect.
What did you think of the Cullen stuff?
You did a great job. I mean, it was beautiful.
Were you surprised or no?
He's all. I've said before, you know. I said when he got knocked down. I mean, it's not too surprising. I don't think that it happened. I mean, I'm glad you nailed it down. But were you surprised?
Well, no. I said, you know, when it was weird that, you know, I mean, you've done this obviously forever. When sometimes you read things and from people and you think, boy, that is way too clean. Like, that's way too coincidental. Geez, you always have the right person to talk to, and there's old, you know. Old Charlie, who I've known forever, no last name, no history of who they are, you know. But no, I wasn't surprised. Did you read the Globe's like response to it afterwards, after the internal investigation of Cullen?
Yeah,
it's more incredible than the Cullen story. It's actually like it's one of the most incredible documents I've ever read in my life. It's mind blowing to me, that whole story.
Well,
he's a columnist today. He probably wrote a column today about, you know, some guy in Southie who he knows, and it just keeps rolling on.
Well, you know, I mean, he had had problems before. I mean, he did the whole thing on that guy, shot the liquor. He was involved in a conspiracy. He drove the getaway car when they shot the liquor store.
Oh, yeah.
Said he was a Vietnam vet.
Right.
And he and Barnacle were involved
that's
in
right,
that.
They were together,
a 60
right?
Minutes thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Barnacle got him the job. I mean, right. that's all. I mean, that's all
that
you
incredible?
Need to know. Yeah.
And Barnacle, by the way, is on TV today on that stupid show, like, you know, probably telling his jokes about Trump. And this is a guy who just made his career just making
shit up. Well, yeah, I mean,
you know,
that's always funny, too. I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, it does make it easy for a talk show host when you say, when you have a guy like Barnacle saying, you know, the thing that gets me about Trump is he lies.
Yes, dishonesty, right?
Really?
That bothers you? It's incredible.
My guess is
the people who watch that show, probably 98% of them don't even know what he did,
no,
right?
I remember one time I was filling in for VB when he was working for Channel 25, and it was just a break, you know, and I was talking to Gene Levanchy, and we were laughing about Barnacle, you know, how can they have Barnacle on the show? And then one of the young female reporters was listening to us. No idea. So she Googles it, and then she comes up to us like a half hour later and says, I had no idea. Nobody ever told me what this guy did.
Don't you think there were, you know, 40, 50 years ago, pre-internet, pre-Google, this probably happened. There are probably guys who had whole careers doing this and got away with it. I mean, I'm sure you had suspicions of people over the years.
Well, I remember one time, the first Super Bowl in 86 for the Patriots.
Yeah.
I go down to New Orleans, and I had the Globe with me, and I open up this column by Barnacle, and I said, this is A.J. Liebling,
the
Earl of Louisiana.
Yeah.
He'd lifted the whole
thing out. Really?
Yeah. And you know, I know that, you know, that's a really obscure book.
Sure.
You know, but he lifted it. And, Peter Lucas busted him. He was coming back from the Iowa caucuses, and he was, you know, stuck at O'Hare or somewhere. So he picked up a Chicago paper, and he read a Mike Royko column. And then, like, he comes back to Boston, and 2 days later, he reads it under Mike Barnacle's byline.
Totally?
Yeah, did it with Jimmy Cannon, too.
Right.
That was his whole thing, and he got away with it. And nobody ever did anything.
Are you enjoying this period of your career? The sort of on your own, running your own business?
Yes.
How many affiliates are you on?
Close to 30. But the bigger thing is now is that, you know, you don't need to be on that many affiliates because you have all the different platforms.
Right,
you know, you have iTunes, and I have the iHeart app.
You have the app,
And I'm also on Newsmax two hours a day. So, you know, if you notice, like, 4 to 6, we have a lot of different accents.
Show.
I mean, you know, Newsmax doesn't have the audience of Fox, but it's in 50 million homes. And if you're in 50 million homes, you're going to get a certain percentage of them are going to just find you by accident.
Do you feel professionally more free, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry.
Yes.
When I left, one of the people that I talked to who'd also worked for that company said, you know, you're lucky to get out of there, Howie. You were going to get cancer. And I said, guess what? I already had cancer. It was just skin cancer. But, you're right. It would have been cancer of the pancreas or something.
Certainly can add stress. I think you and I can agree to that.
Yes. Yes, it can. And, I think, if you can get out and make this thing work, you know, the new thing, the podcast, you're going to be much better off. It'll add years to your life, decades.
Have you ever had to deal with, the answer is probably yes, with activists or people who are going at you or going at sponsors or going at clients, or have you been?
I've been occasionally here and there.
But I think you have loyalty. Your clients know what they get.
Right.
Right? I mean, you know them. You have relationships with them, and that's the deal.
I haven't had the same problem. Knock on wood, I haven't had the same problems you had.
Yeah.
But I hope to continue.
I think you will. I think you have a good, strong relationship. But I think that comes from years of building a brand and people knowing who you are, right?
Yeah, I think it is too, and I'm careful. I try not to cross the line.
Are you cranking as we speak right now? Are you currently writing a book?
No, not
really.
Not right now, no.
That's unusual for you.
Yeah, the thing was this Kennedy Babylon 2. I tried to pack a lot into it because I didn't want to write Kennedy Babylon 3.
You could though. That's the amazing thing. You could probably write 8 of them.
Yeah,
it is wild.
You know, I always say, you know, like Nigel Hamilton, he was the guy that the Kennedys wanted to write all the biographies of JFK. And he wrote JFK Reckless Youth, and it was not what they expected because right. It was a truthful version.
Right.
And then he just said, I'm walking away. And they said, well, you know, this was a great book. Why are you walking away? He said, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life writing about this guy.
Yeah. Right.
And I understand that totally.
Yeah. What's the best? First of all, I love both these books. They're great. Is the Hamilton one the best? We'll remove yours. Is that the best book about any Kennedy or no? Or would you say this?
I mean, they're all in their own ways.
I mean, of them are.
Yeah, I mean, the Dark Side of Camelot is
that
really
Hirsch?
That's Seymour Hirsch.
Yeah,
that's
about, I read that. That's a good one.
That's like got some great scandal stuff
right,
in there.
Right.
And Nigel Hamilton is really a good one too. I mean, just about JFK's Reckless Youth. I mean, that's the title of
What's
it.
Interesting about DeMore is that he first started out writing these sort of ass-kissing Kennedy things, right?
Right.
Yeah.
JFK, the Cape Cod years.
The Cape Cod, right. Days of sailing and playing touch football.
Yeah, I ordered that from, a used bookstore. It's hard to get through. It's just right. Saccharine.
Yeah. that still exists today. A lot of that stuff is still out there. I mean, you know, it's weird. Like, the left still wants, for some reason, wants the Kennedys to be something. It's odd. I don't understand it. I mean, they're trying to build up what's-his-face still now as a candidate.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, too, you know what's really weird is that, you know, a lot of the pictures in these books have come from the JFK library that are in the public. They put them in the public domain.
PD, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I go, why would you put the pictures of Fiddle and Faddle in the public domain? I'm really happy. But,
right.
I, you know, they don't seem to think things through very well.
Who is going to oppose Donald Trump in 2020?
I have no idea. I mean, it's just, there's so many. I mean, every day, I just can't imagine that he can bear up under scrutiny. I mean, they call him Beta O'Rourke.
Right. How excited were you when you saw that Liz Warren video, the beer video, for the first time? It's one of the great humor pieces, I think. I'll put that up against any comedy of the last 50 years. I could watch that all day.
The great thing is that you can put it up with the John Kerry video walking into the general store in Ohio where he goes in 2004, can I get me a hunting license?
You talk about the guns, these guns and them guns. And what is it about at the beginning of campaigns where people think, whether it's, you know, I guess Dukakis was later on, or John Kerry, you're right, or even like the idea to make Jeb Bush sort of like, what is it where they try and make these people things they clearly aren't? Like Liz Warren, she looked at her husband like he was an alien, like he floated in from like
right.
drinking a beer. It would be like, you know, she didn't even
right.
know. Why,
well, I mean,
why do that?
You know, the thing, and again, this is one of the reasons I like Trump, is he looks at that video and he has the same reaction that you and I do.
Correct.
Which is, why is she welcoming him to the house like he's a stranger?
Right.
You know, he lives in the house.
Presumably.
Where is he supposed to be if he's not in the kitchen?
And to also Trump's credit, I'll give him credit for this, he would never do a video like that because he knows it's fake. Like, he wouldn't do a video that's clearly not him. He might do
right.
a video that's him, but he wouldn't say, he doesn't drink beer, for example. Trump doesn't drink.
Right.
He wouldn't do that to see, because he's trying to seem, Liz Warren's trying to seem like just folks, right? She's trying to seem like she's middle America.
Right.
She doesn't know. What does middle America do? Oh, they drink beer. Like, but you don't. What are you doing?
Right.
It's what
he will, under, well, I think that's the benefit of having a TV background. You know, he understands that there's certain.
Business, though, because he deals with people. He's dealt
right.
with people.
Yeah, he deals with construction unions. They keep saying, well, you know, he's known some mobsters. Well, he's in the construction industry in New York City.
Yeah.
He's not going to be in the construction industry in New York City very
long
if he right. doesn't know some of those guys.
What will, all right, I'll ask you this. Will Liz Warren make it past Iowa and New Hampshire in the primary?
I don't know. I just think it's too early to tell.
Well, I know, but I mean, we're speculating here.
I'm going to say yes, she'll make it, that she'll somehow figure out a way to take care of Bernie, and she'll be one of the contenders. But
right.
I don't think she will prevail ultimately.
Well, if you had to pick, under your head, who would face Trump?
She's pretty weak.
Who would be your dream pick from a show perspective? Her?
Oh, Biden? It'd be Elizabeth Warren.
It would be Warren for sure.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
It may, or maybe Biden, because Biden's such a boob.
He is such a fool. He is such a dope.
I mean, and again, Trump was absolutely right about that when he said Obama picked him off the garbage pile.
You know, true.
I mean, he never was got more than 1% of the vote.
He's never drawn a vote. So 88
Dukakis took him out.
Right. 88 gets
with a dirty
trick. He gets kicked out. Right. He gets kicked out for plagiarizing. Right.
Yeah.
And there's these weird videos of him with like touching people's hair and smelling them. This weird stuff.
And
going
very
on.
Young women too.
Yeah,
very
a lot of
young
weird
women
shit going on with him.
Yeah.
But how old would he be then? 78
Yeah, 78
I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. You know, Kamala Harris, she's from California. She's semi-multiracial, but she's got skeletons in her closet. You know, she was Willie Brown's girlfriend.
I think Trump's gonna win again. I've been saying it all along. People don't want to believe. Don't you think? Like, who voted for Trump? Who's not going to vote for Trump?
No, I know. He's just got to like, you know, extend. He's got to reach out. I mean, that was what the whole thing was about with the speech, the primetime speech.
Right.
He was trying to reach out. I mean, he's got 45%. He needs to get like up to 48-49%.
Right. Hillary, no chance she runs again?
I don't think so.
That's too bad.
I mean, the fact that, you know, the fact that now that Bill Clinton's being heckled as a rapist.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bad sign for her.
Well, I think even like the mainstream media, to some extent, has come around a little bit on that, where they've started to look at this guy. I mean, you know, it's what's interesting to me, though, and I've talked about this, is did you read James Patterson's book about Jeffrey Epstein or no?
No.
It's good, but he never mentions Clinton in it ever, not once. And Clinton was flying around with him all the time.
Right, to Lolita Island.
Right. All right, the book is Kennedy Babylon 2, correct?
Two.
Yes,
Volume
2.
Volume 2,
yes. Definitely pick it up. It's available everywhere, right?
Yes, available everywhere. The best place to get it is on my website, HowieCarshow.com. Click on the store. You could also get it on Amazon, but of course, I don't get as much money if
so you
order it off of Amazon.
You know what that's about. It's
also in bits and Barnes and Noble. It's on all the local.
Yeah, that's
Barnes
where I
Nobles.
Got it. I'm sorry. I should have gone to Howie's Car Store.
No, that's fine. That's fine. We sold the Barnes and Noble hundreds of copies, so they got plenty of copies.
Are you out signing these things all over the place or no?
Absolutely. The thing about if you order from the store, you can get an autographed copy.
There you go.
From my store.
Excellent. Howie, maybe I'll be seeing a lot of you. I know you're looking forward to seeing me a lot more in the next couple of months, I'm sure.
I am, as long as the check clears.
I figured as much. Yeah. All right, Howie. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kurt.